The Bookhouse is an independent bookstore with two locations in New Jersey, Millburn and Long Branch. Are you the guy who says they like to support indie bookstores? Good. Then be that guy. Come shop at The Bookhouse. Books, puzzles, games, coffee, cards, live author events, comedy nights, and most important, a real sense of community where actual human beings engage with one another. The Bookhouse in downtown Millburn and at Pier Village in Long Branch. That's The Bookhouse. Independent, local, quaint as fuck. Follow us on Instagram and come visit our stores.
Hi, everyone, and welcome to the Book and Film Globe podcast. I am your host, Neil Pollack, the greatest living American writer and the editor-in-chief of Book and Film Globe, www.bookandfilmglobe.com. We cover the worlds of books and film and streaming TV and so much more. We have a very unorthodox, or at least a heterodox, show for you this week. We're going to be talking about some issues and some problems in the worlds of books and film. We're going to talk to author Megan Daum, also the founder of the Unspeakeasy, which is a sort of a free speech community, mostly for women, but some for men as well. And Megan and I are going to be speaking freely about Am I Racist?, which is a new documentary from conservative Twitter personality Matt Walsh that exposes the excesses of the diversity, equity, and inclusion industry and makes the grifters in that industry look pretty bad. I am one of the few critics who had the courage to see and review this film, and I gave it a pretty solid review, 3 out of 5 stars. It's not a masterpiece, but it's a funny and interesting look at a world that needs to be exposed. But first, I'm going to talk to Elisa Albert, who is a writer who recently had a book panel canceled at the Albany Book Festival because the writers didn't want to sit with her because she is a quote-unquote Zionist. So this is part of a trend in the literary world where Jewish writers are being canceled by bookstores and other writers and literary associations. And it's got to stop. And we stand firmly against that at Book and Film Globe. And Elisa Albert obviously stands firmly against it as well. And she's been kind enough to join me on the show. And she will be with me to talk about this situation right after this musical interlude. We've been covering a trend on the site of writers being canceled basically because they're Jewish. The author Gabriel Zevin, who wrote a novel called Tomorrow and Tomorrow and Tomorrow, has had bookstore appearances canceled because at least one of her characters in that best-selling novel is an Israeli. There was a writer in New York who lost a speaking event because he was scheduled to be interviewed by a rabbi. And now the author Elisa Albert, who is someone who I know personally and have known for many years, has had a panel at the Albany Book Festival canceled because two of the writers she was going to interview on that panel said they didn't want to share a stage with a quote-unquote Zionist. I know Elisa, and I don't, she may be a Zionist, I don't know, but regardless, she's here today to talk to me about this situation, which, Elisa, this is the most appalling of all of them.
So far.
So tell me exactly what happened here.
First of all, let me just say I am very much a Zionist, proudly so, as defined as a person who believes in the state of Israel's right to exist.
Yeah, me too.
Full stop.
Me too.
We're a couple Zionists here. So I guess now's the time for anyone who's frightened by that to head for the exit.
Yeah, I'm happy to at this point to call myself a Zionist. And I never consider myself like an active Zionist until last October 7th. And then
what does an active Zionist look like?
I don't know. But basically, like, I, like you, have been shocked and saddened by, you know, you've been a professional writer for many years, and I've been shocked and saddened by the response of the literary community to October 7th. I feel like I have other worlds that I'm a part of, but I feel like the literary world in particular has been especially anti-Jewish since October 7th.
Well, I think it's a lot of ignorance, it's a lot of performativity, and it's a lot of groupthink. It's a lot of trying to figure out which way the wind's blowing and sort of hopping on whatever bandwagon seems like it's coolest. I think there's a lot of opportunists in any creative field because you can really fake it as an artist in many ways. You don't actually have to be super thoughtful, super well-versed, super honest intellectually or emotionally. You know, there's a lot of bullshit artists, as we all know. And I think this year has exposed a lot of garbage behavior from a lot of garbage people.
Well, that's for sure. And look, we all have a little bit of bullshit artist in them. I mean, I literally made...
Not me.
Me for sure. I mean, I made my career by calling myself the greatest living American writer. So let's... But that said, I didn't make my career by refusing to appear on panels with people who are Latino or Black or queer or Palestinian or Muslim or anybody. I mean, I would have appeared on a panel with David Duke. I don't care. Like, I
seriously, Hitler, bring it on, man. Let's talk. I want to know what that motherfucker has to say. Can I curse on this podcast?
You can. And you know, for me, a gig's a gig. You know, if somebody asks me, if somebody wants me to appear in public, I will. So tell me a little bit about what happened to you at the Albany. You live in Albany, right? You are.
I do. This is like my hometown. I've lived in this vicinity for about 15 years, and I've been involved with the New York State Writers Institute on many occasions when I have my own books out and sort of volunteering to help moderate panels like this or just, you know, whatever. It's a friendly scene and it's been a nice part of my community and life and work up here. And my husband actually also is a fellow at the New York State Writers Institute. He's in the English department at SUNY Albany, which is where the Institute is housed. So that's a little complicated right now as well.
Right. So this is like, this is your home court and you were scheduled to moderate a panel of coming of age novels, basically, right?
It was called Girls Coming of Age, you know, and when I agreed to do it months and months ago, I rolled my eyes a little bit because, like, what the hell is that supposed to mean? And, like, what kind of reductive, you know, decontextualized implications or, you know, girls? Okay, whatever. Sure, girls. But I was sent the books. There's three panelists. I was sent the books a couple weeks ago. I was kind of going to, you know, between you and me and whoever's listening to this, I was going to read the books the day before, you know, I mean, as one does.
You skim for the salient.
You know, if I love something, of course, like I'll put everything else aside and, you know, off to the races, yeah. But it's a crapshoot. I guess, fortunately, one of the upsides of this situation is that I didn't have to spend my Friday doing that. Instead, I was talking to reporters all day. I got a call Thursday, 2 days before the festival. I got an email saying, hey, we got to talk on the phone. We have a situation. That email was leaked to the press. And there were some phone calls that followed. They were, you know, the administrators were kind of baffled and sort of sitting there being like, what do you think we should do? And I told them very clearly, there is only one thing to do here, which is to say we publicly denounce anti-Semitic bigotry and discrimination. We stand by our nice Jewish Zionist friend and the right of the state of Israel to exist. And we're going to have a great book festival without these people.
And that's not what they did.
No, they were like, oh, that's, you know, there's no panel. Like, oh, and then the third panelist, that two of the panelists were the ones who objected to sharing space with a quote unquote Zionist, yeah. Because, you know, we crave the blood of Gentile children. Mm. I don't know if that's frowned upon these days. That's a joke.
I know. We know. We know it's a joke.
Well,
it's
like, you know, for posterity, like when, you know, when the empire is in ruins and people mm-hmm. are kind of wondering what the hell was going on here. The third panelist just sort of, I don't know any of these people, but the third panelist apparently in a separate conversation I was not privy to said, I don't want anything to do with any of this controversy or problem or whatever. So just like count me out. Which, like, I can understand on some level, but on another level, like, for the record, for the future, like, fucking pick a side.
Yeah, stand up for the Jews. So I want to name names, and I have named names in the Book and Film Globe piece that I haven't written it yet as we're talking, but by the time people listen to this, it will have been published. I want to name the names of the
people. You do it, because you know what? In Judaism, there's a concept, Yimach Shemo in Hebrew, which means may their names be erased. It means that, like, when people are truly foul and hideous, you don't even honor them with names. Like, forget them. Like, they're unimportant.
Yes. Although I have to call up the article so I actually know their names. Give me. There's an article in the Times of Israel. Lisa Koh and Aisha Abdel Gawad, and then the third panelist who was sort of a wishy-washy. Her name was Emily Layton. Mm. So these are the women, the first two women are the women who refused to appear on the stage with the Zionists. Now, you wrote, I mean, I think this all stems from, you wrote in Tablet, which is a Jewish public, online Jewish publication, a letter after the October 7th attacks. And you were sort of, it was a letter really meant for people who were supporting Hamas and, you know, and people, kind of people who were marching the streets, chanting glory to the martyrs.
Yeah.
And
it was for all my nice little, like, liberal arts friends who, you know, were passing around memes that said by any means necessary in beautiful floral fonts and motifs, you know, intifada forever from the river to the sea. They have no idea what this means. They're going to go about their lives. They're going to go to the farmer's market tomorrow. They're not going to get massacred at like Fresh Grass Music Festival at Mass Mocha next weekend.
They're fine.
Like, they're fine.
Yeah. It'll never come to our shores. You know, but I would say I read your letter, and it's, you know, it's, yes, it is worded very strongly, but it's also, you know, it's short, you know, it's a few paragraphs. It's not like, you know, you are the author of the Israel Has an Infallible Right to Exist book.
Exactly. That piece was typed out on my phone in the notes app at 3 o'clock in the morning after I got a DM from some Hudson Valley rando sort of scolding me for not having more empathy for Hamas. Mm. And that was November. I, you know, by the way, PS, I was in Israel the first 2 weeks of October. I was there on October 7th, and I was very nearly at Kibbutz Be'eri on October 7th, because that's where my stepfather is from. And we have friends and family there. And we were like, oh, should we go to Kibbutz Be'eri for Shabbat? Nah, let's stay in Tel Aviv. So this is not theoretical to me. This is not like far away from me. This is not like something that's happening very far away that I'm kind of interested in. This is my friends, family, and like really like my deepest home.
Yeah.
You know, diaspora, fine. I'm from LA, fine. I've lived in New York for 20 plus years, fine. But this is all a way station. Like, this is not meaningful to me. You know what I mean?
Yes, I do. I mean, I am a different brand of Jew than you. I've never actually even been to Israel.
Oh,
I know. It's a huge huge hole in my life, especially now. But that said, you know, I still had a Jewish education. You know, my entire family is Jewish. Many of my closest friends are Jewish. Many of my work colleagues are Jewish. And to me, like, I'm so appalled and so angry at the response of, specifically, the literary community, because when you look at the creative community as a whole, when you look at, let's say, Hollywood, there are a lot of Jews in Hollywood, and I feel like, you know, there have been a lot of outspoken major voices, you know, in Israel's favor. You know, among journalists, it's been a bit of a mixed bag, but I'd say mostly you get a pro-Israel stance. But these lit people, they're so wrong about this. They've been wrong.
They're ignorant. It's just ignorant.
But, you know, they've been, here's the thing. They've been wrong. This community, which I no longer consider myself a part of, even though I'm a published author and I do love literature, they've been wrong about a lot of things over the last few years. You know, I wasn't in touch with you much over, you know, over the COVID years, but I got in a lot of arguments about COVID policy with these folks. And lost a lot of friends, you know, because I was speaking out against social distancing and masking, and mm-hmm. not so much the vaccine, but just like the general vibe of the COVID years. And I feel like it's a lot of the same people who are you know, anti-Zionist at this point. There's a lot of crossover.
It's a little bit of a fascism. It's like fascism is so attractive to people who are not very broad-minded, because it allows them to just kind of be off the hook. If you can ascribe to the letter with whatever is prescribed for you, and I don't mean prescribed in a medical sense, obviously, you know, you're really off the hook. You can just sort of like go about your day and not think too hard about anything and not have any real personal responsibility. Like, it's hard to think for yourself. It's hard to like do your own reading, thinking, seeing, hearing. Like, that takes work. Who the fuck wants to do that? Like, check out, man. Like, what's the party line? Like, done.
Right. But ostensibly, writers should be independent thinkers. And
yes.
Obviously they're not. I mean, look, let's be clear too. That, like, when you and I came up in the sort of literary and journalism world, a lot of the people, a lot of the writers, prominent writers were Jewish, right? And a lot of the people who were working at the publishing houses were Jewish, and there's just a heavily Jewish presence in the industry. And that has abated to some extent, and now we're the old guard. And I understand that. Like, I understand that there has been a change in demographics in the literary world. And that's okay. Like, there's been a change of demographics in the United States. That shouldn't change the fact that Jews need to be part of the tolerance matrix.
The tolerance matrix.
You know what I mean? Like, I mean, we're here, and
we're queer, and we're Jewish.
We're Jewish, and we deserve respect. And you know, and you need to be able to sit.
I don't know if we deserve respect, but we deserve to exist.
Well, there's
that. You can disrespect us all day long, like.
Oh, yeah, we like that.
Show up to the fucking literary panel and take a shit on me if that's your jam.
But show up. Don't say I refuse to share the stage with a Zionist.
Oh, it's so cowardly and it's so counterproductive. Like, who does that help?
Right.
Other than your own, like, sad, sick, struggling ego, of course.
Yeah, it is. It's a virtue signal that actually becomes a vice.
It's a vice signal. Let's just rename that a vice signal.
Yeah, it's a vice signal. Really, it's just kind of the face of evil in girls' form.
You know, I just think about on another level, I'm just like, oh, you guys, like, you're so misguided. You're so confused. Like, you don't understand your own job description. You don't understand, like, any form of actual personal responsibility. You're not helping anyone. Like, how does a person emerge into middle age and think that this is, like, a responsible way to engage the problems of the world?
And they are on the wrong side of history.
Well, I mean, you know, that's cold comfort because we're going to all be long dead, but whatever. Sure.
It's all I can really kind of console myself with at this point. But I do think it's important. And I find it heartening. You know, there's been, you've received a lot of support
I really have. I'm so heartened. Like, I actually the other day said to my husband, like, wow, I think I actually do see now that love is bigger than hate. Like, oh my God.
Maybe a little bit.
I can't believe I'm saying something so totally sappy and I actually feel it. Like, hate is very small and love is enormous.
There is that. And there's also the fact that, like, you know, I think there still are a lot of people who believe in true tolerance and true freedom of speech and in, you know, and in Jewish people and Judaism and Israel. You have more, you know, the fact that the anti-Jewish voices are loud doesn't mean that the pro-Jewish voices don't exist.
No, absolutely. And I'm in a very Jewish community. Like, I'm not alone in life at all. I'm surrounded in a beautiful way. And I've, you know, that part of that is my own doing. It's not accidental.
But you're going to win. You're going to win this. We're going to win this. We have to call. I am one for naming names and for calling out this behavior, and I hope that maybe this is a tipping point. You know, that we've seen enough of these. We've seen enough of these instances in the last year for us to realize it's an actual problem, and that this kind of bullshit cannot be tolerated. So real quick, while I've got you here, you've got a book out, right?
Oh yeah, like my other job when I'm not like being a Jewish lioness.
Your actual job.
It's a collection of essays published over the last decade. It's kind of the greatest hits. It's called The Snarling Girl, which is one of the essays, which is the essay that I have consistently received the most reader mail about, actually, until now. I guess that essay has been dethroned now because now I'm getting a lot of mail about other things. But
yeah,
people really connected to that essay, which came out in 2017 and was written for an anthology called Double Bind, Women and Ambition. And it's this essay in which I grapple with kind of like, what am I doing as a writer? Like, who am I writing for? What am I writing for? Is it fame? Is it fortune? Is it clicks? Is it likes? What's the impetus for writing? What's the function of writing? Like, if I'm not, you know, the ultimate bestseller, like, does that mean I'm a fucking loser and I should just shut up and go away and like slink off into the shadows embarrassed? Or does writing have some other bigger, deeper purpose?
Well, I can't answer those questions, but I can tell people that The Snarling Girl is available now. And I'm guessing if you are living in a town that has a book festival, that Elisa Albert is going to appear.
Oh, I'll show up anywhere. No, I don't know.
Yeah.
Maybe.
Yeah, people are going to start. People are going to start buying you plane tickets.
Bring it on.
That's really a writer's dream, is just to get a free trip somewhere.
Yeah, hotel room, right?
A hotel room is nice. Mm-hmm. All right. Well, thank you so much for standing up.
Thanks, Neil.
For Israel.
You too.
And for the I do what
you
I
too.
Can.
I hope, and I really hope you get to go there someday, because I think your mind will be blown.
I mean, I am fully I am fully vested in paying a visit to the Jewish homeland at this point.
All right. I'll talk to you soon. Thanks again.
You bet.
Take care.
What is racism?
Martin Luther King said not to judge people by the...
Martin Luther King said a lot of stuff.
Is America inherently racist?
What the hell is that?
The word inherent is challenging there. America is racist to its bones. All of the...
So inherently.
Yeah.
The entire system has to burn. And I'm not going to even use save this country. This country is not worth saving. This country is a piece of shit.
They gonna say you racist, but they call everybody...
There are currently 11... certified Rotten Tomatoes reviews for the new documentary Am I Racist on Rotten Tomatoes. Mine is one of them. I gave Am I Racist, a new film from conservative Twitter personality Matt Walsh, I gave it 3 out of 5 stars, which I feel like is a pretty fair assessment of what that film deserves. And I don't know a lot of people who have seen Am I Racist, but I know that Megan Daum, longtime friend of mine and a colleague and a great writer in her own right, has seen the movie, and I brought her in today to talk to me about Am I Racist. Hello, Megan.
Hi, Neil.
Hello. Yes. Yeah, so this film there's always this disparity, right, between audience ratings and critic ratings on Rotten Tomatoes. And this has a huge disparity, not so much in the ratings, but just in the number of critics who have seen it as opposed to the number of people who have seen it and written about it.
Yes.
And I think that's because most people who write about movies, and Matt Walsh has talked about this on his Twitter feed, are liberals or left-wing political types, and Matt Walsh is definitely not that.
Yes, and I think, we're just not accustomed to taking seriously documentaries from conservatives. You know what it is that I think documentaries from conservatives get classified as propaganda.
Yeah. As opposed to, say, the films of Michael Moore.
Definitely not propaganda.
No, not in the least. And, well, that's the thing. It's like there are documentaries like Life of Flannery O'Connor or, people.
Well, that's
people
propaganda.
Yeah, but you know what I'm saying? Like, there's lots of documentaries that really don't have a strong political bent one way or another. But then there are political documentaries. You know, on the left, you had the late Morgan Spurlock and Michael Moore. And on the right, you have, Dinesh D'Souza making movies, which are clearly propaganda, and also Matt Walsh. I saw Am I Racist. I didn't really think it was propaganda. I just thought it was, it was conservative.
I don't even know if it was conservative. There's really no reason it should have been. And that applies to his previous film, What is a Woman?
Yeah.
I mean, on its face, there's really nothing partisan about either of these arguments, which is that...
No, it's really that he's calling, in these movies, he's calling out kind of cultural and political excesses on the left.
Yes.
And Am I Racist is a documentary about the diversity, equity, and inclusion movement and about the sort of the hustlers and the scam artists who make money by offering seminars and other sort of perks to people who are mostly to white people who are trying to expunge themselves of the original sin of racism, I would say.
Right. And a lot of these consultants, sometimes called grifters, but let's just give them the benefit of the doubt and call them consultants, are brought in by corporations and institutions, universities, nonprofits. And I thought it was interesting that he didn't talk to the people and the businesses that bring these folks in. Maybe he tried to and they wouldn't speak with him wisely, but I think that's an interesting angle just in and of itself.
Well, yes, but I think part of the, this is where I found the movie was lacking, is it, I felt like as a film, it was just kind of like, it didn't focus in that hard on the DEI movement. It was framed as this like journey that Matt Walsh was going on this journey to try to rid himself of his racism when you knew obviously that, you know, he didn't actually think he was a racist. And
right.
And this wasn't a sincere journey. You know, he basically, like, sort of the inciting incident of the film occurs when he lives in Boulder, Colorado, and he goes to an anti-racism workshop run by one of these grifters and immediately starts trolling it and clowning it. And they recognize him from Twitter and they call the cops on him. Then he puts on a man bun wig and different glasses and he becomes a DEI educator. Although the movie doesn't really commit to that. He mostly just uses that as there's that one funny scene at the end where he gives this workshop, I think in California.
Yeah. So, right. The conceit is that he is educating himself and ultimately he's going to become a DEI consultant himself. But it's odd because I don't think that there are any like white male DEI consultants, at least that we meet. There's a couple white women. Most of them are black women.
Yeah.
And I think the fact that most of them are women is something to think about. I think that's a large component of this, which we can get into if you want, but
sure. Yeah. Why is that?
Well, there's this whole concept that I have been developing and thinking about that has to do with weaponized female empathy. Mm. And I think this is driving and has driven the so-called cancel culture movement more than people are willing to grapple with and recognize. I mean, if you look at like most of the cancel culture events, the ones that are in the news, they tend to ultimately have been sparked by women. It's usually a woman making an accusation, a woman taking to social media to shame somebody. Even something like the Christian Cooper bird watching scandal, that this was the Central Park Karen event that happened in right before George Floyd, actually. So
it was an early COVID scandal.
This was the woman who confronted the white woman who confronted a black man in Central Park. Because she thought he was threatening her dog. Anyway, this became an explosive, massive event. And it wasn't actually because this guy went out of his way to publicly shame this woman. It's because his sister went on Facebook and recounted the entire episode. And then it became a huge thing.
This is the Karenization of America.
Yeah. Yeah. And I think this is key. I think this is driven by women. And so it's a little bit curious that we would believe that somebody like him would actually be a DEI consultant. But I get it. That's the conceit of the film.
Perhaps the movie might have been more effective if it had been if he had a female co-presenter.
Yeah, he had his black producer, then that was useful.
Yeah, that was, and that worked actually really well because here's the thing. Like, to me, like the best part of it, and I did actually enjoy Am I Racist? It was
fun. So did I.
It was funny. I mean, it's funny. It calls attention to a scam industry, which is what a good documentary can and should do. But you know, for all its narrative problems, it does do that. And to me, the money shot, so to speak, of this documentary is when you know he brings Robin DiAngelo, the ultimate race Karen, author of White Fragility, the sort of queen of DEI grifting. He brings her into some studio somewhere and manages to guilt her into giving his black producer friend $30 out of her wallet for reparations.
Look, if I knew that's all it took, I would have given long ago.
Yeah, sure. You know, it's a tip for Robin DiAngelo because he then reveals she charges $15,000 for an interview, which is a lot. You know, I don't charge anything. I'll talk to anybody.
I'll pay people.
Yeah, please.
I pay people to have me on. Yeah, well, I was amazed. Right. So does he give Ben a few bucks?
Yes, he gives Ben. He pulls some singles or something, whatever he's got in his wallet. It's not much. It's maybe 20, 25 bucks. And he gives it to Ben. And then she does say, like, I don't really think that's what reparations are supposed to be about.
Yes.
She does say,
to her credit.
She says that. She realizes it's stupid, but then she does it anyway.
Right. And so she actually gets up off of the couch where she's being interviewed and she has to go over to her purse and we see her walk over. She's got a very nice purse, by the way. And she's like, takes out, you know, she goes through her wallet. She's like, okay, this is all I have. I have 30 bucks. I was waiting for her to ask if he took Venmo.
That would have been funnier, but I like that she just got her spare change out of her wallet. So that's like, to me, that's the by far and away the best scene in the movie. He does like a recreation of the Jussie Smollett news hoax. Yeah. That doesn't quite. I liked the he played the interview of Jussie Smollett, like talking to Robin Roberts, like so obviously like a phony.
Yes, you and I were early. We were early to be outspoken about how we didn't buy that.
I mean, it was so obviously a grift that it was like, I mean, so obvious. It made none of it made any sense. Anyway, no. So that was okay. But then also I thought his sketch about renaming the George Washington Monument the George Floyd Monument. It was okay. I mean, he's going to make it 30 feet taller and paint it black.
Yeah, that was pretty subtle there. You can look.
Yeah, at and then people were. He was getting people to sign a petition or whatever, and some people would, and some people wouldn't. It was that was fine, but like I felt like those were like little side jokes. It didn't quite work. But the other scene that I thought was pretty good. This is a scene featuring two women who you've interviewed on your own podcast. On one of your, I think you have 17 different podcasts, but one of your many media outlets. You talked to Syra Rao and Monica Jackson, right?
Regina Jackson.
And they are the founders of A Race to Dinner.
Yes.
Which is a dinner party series where they have guilty wealthy white women give them money so they can lecture them about how they're racist.
Yeah. So Syra Rao and Regina Jackson are two entrepreneurial women. It's not a nonprofit. It's a business. It's called Race to Dinner. That would be the number two. Mm. And they will go into a dinner party of white women. It has to be white women. And basically put them through a racial struggle session. And the women have to pay for the whole thing. I mean, in addition to paying the speaker's fee, which I think is around the $5,000 range, I'm sure it's been more at times. You know, they provide the food, they pay for the dinner, they get everybody there, get the wine, and then bring in Syra and Regina to kind of go through this really intense sort of reckoning that involves just, you know, being told how racist they are, being told that we live in a white supremacy, the whole thing has to be burned down. The women have to talk about how racist they are when they were last racist. If they start crying, they have to go into the cry room.
Oh yeah. They love the cry rooms.
Yeah.
Well, okay. And so Matt Walsh somehow infiltrates one of these struggle sessions. It couldn't have been that much of a setup, but he's a waiter at one of them. He's like wearing an N95.
He's a server. Like it's a private dinner and it's like, he's the help that's been brought in.
And he's wearing an N95 mask. And whenever Syra Rao says something ridiculous, like America sucks or we need to burn it all down, he'll like overfill someone's water or like drop a plate and there's some pratfalling, whatever. I mean, it's a comic film, so okay, he's going to do some quote unquote comedy, but like the real benefit of that scene is just seeing Syra Rao and like the hate and really kind of evil rhetoric she is spouting and making money off of. I mean, come on, you've got to be kidding me.
Well,
you know, Monica Jackson struck me as like a little bit
Regina Jackson.
Regina, why do I keep calling her Monica? She's like the good cop.
Yeah, Regina is. It seems like a really nice person, actually. Yeah. So we
laughing all the way to the bank.
Yeah, right. We should just say, just for a little more context. So Syra and Regina have a book called White Women: Everything You Already Know About Your Own Racism and How to Do Better. Mm. And that came out maybe a year or so ago, a couple of years ago. And there's also a documentary that goes along with their Race to Dinner franchise called Deconstructing Karen. And in that film, you know, we see a dinner party, although it's not, it's actually been cast. Like the women in that documentary have been cast to be in this film. And it really looks like a Real Housewives kind of thing. Like the women have that look. And you just, you know, instantly hate them if you're watching it.
Right. So. All right. So look, I mean, so Am I Racist? It does a service, right? It does expose this industry to some extent. I feel like it could have done better. You know, Matt Walsh is like a Twitter personality. He, you know, writes for this is produced by Ben Shapiro's The Daily Wire. It had kind of a loose, shaggy, you know, semi-produced frat boy feel about it, right?
Yeah.
It's not a very slick movie.
Well, it's not unslick.
I mean, it knows what it's doing, but what I'm saying is, like, it could, I felt like it really, this could have been like the dagger to the heart. It was more like a glancing blow.
Right. See, this is the problem I have with Matt Walsh. It's frustrating. I do think he's funny. Like, I don't particularly dislike him. It's frustrating that he is the one taking on these issues with what is a woman and now with this, because people on the left won't touch it. And I think there are a lot of people that probably, you know, lean left or have, you know, nice lefty friends that they don't want to alienate, who could have done a better, sort of more nuanced, more informed job with these topics. But because they won't, we get Matt Walsh.
Well, yeah, but he's willing to do it.
Yeah, and he's got the funding, and yeah, he's not going to alienate anybody because those people already don't like him.
No, this is his, this is his bread and butter. He makes a good living. It's like the inverse of the DEI people, except that he's actually right.
Right.
He has that going for him. But I do feel like there's no reason why film critics, I'm a Rotten Tomatoes approved film critic. I don't know if you knew that about me.
Oh, I didn't know you had to be certified.
I am. I got certified. It was like, there were a surprising number of steps. Regardless, like, Matt Walsh has been chronicling on Twitter the snarky and mean responses he's been getting from critics who said they would never review a movie as such a racist film. And, you know, they refused to honor him with their presence at a screening or in the theater. And I'm just kind of like, man, if you're a movie critic, you need to see everything.
Yeah.
And you need to review it on its own terms. You know, I just don't get it. I don't get why people won't just engage.
I mean, well, but film criticism isn't really all that relevant anymore. I mean, it used to matter a lot.
Oh, I disagree. I disagree.
Really?
Well, I mean,
your criticism is relevant. But I'm saying, like, do people really care, like, what the New York Times said or like what the New Yorker said?
I think there are people who do, which is why it would be nice if the New York Times or the New Yorker would review something like Am I Racist, even if they don't like it. You know, there are films that do not conform to what the sort of general film going public considers to be acceptable. You know, Am I Racist is making good money in the theaters. It's garnering an audience. You know, when I went, there were ads for right-wing movies, for Christian movies, for a Dinesh D'Souza documentary. There's this whole media ecosphere out there. And I think, you know, we need to engage with it.
Yeah.
All right, Megan, before I let you go, do you have anything you would like to plug? Any organizations that you have founded that are, you know, currently seeking membership? Yes.
I have so many things to promote. You know what? Just for the sake of context, I will say that in addition to my podcast, The Unspeakable, which is a weekly interview podcast that's now on YouTube as well as on audio, I do a podcast with Sarah Hayter called A Special Place in Hell. And that is the one where we had Syra Rao and Regina Jackson on as guests in April of 2023. And it was, I think your audience will perhaps find that quite amusing. They did not realize what they were getting into when they came. So yeah, I have two podcasts. I have an enterprise called The Unspeakeasy, which is a free thought community for women, mostly for women. We do retreats where we get together and have free speech vacations and sit around and talk about complicated things off the record for several days. And we have online community and we have courses, one of which you're going to be teaching.
Yes, yes. I'm teaching a class in humor writing.
Yes.
For y'all starting in late October. And apparently, I was told recently there are only 12 slots available.
It's a bespoke class. Yeah, this is very high touch.
And I am the greatest living American writer, Rotten Tomatoes approved film critic. And I have many other, a three-time Jeopardy champion. I have many credits to my name. So really, to have a chance to interact with me on a personal level is...
This is the entire reason that I started the organization.
Right, because when you...
get you into teach.
Right, because when you think of a free thought community for women, taking a humor writing class from Neil Pollack is definitely like, definitely the first thing that they're going to want.
I mean, Syra Rao, we could probably bring in as like a teaching assistant for you. Anyway, so people can go to theunspeakeasy.com to find out about that. And I probably do a lot of other things, but I can't think of them now.
Megan Dom, thank you so much for talking to me. Am I Racist is in some theaters in some cities now.
My pleasure. Thanks for having me.
All right. Thank you so much, Megan Dom. Always a pleasure to talk to you about anything. One of the more interesting writers and thinkers always very happy to talk to her. And I'm also always very happy to talk to Elisa Albert, who was done a dirty by the Albany Book Festival and by the writers who refused to sit with her because she is a Zionist. We should all be such Zionists that people don't want to sit with us. That is just not acceptable, and we stand against it at Book and Film Globe. All people of good conscience and of all faiths and of all backgrounds should stand against bigotry like that. I am Neil Pollack. I am the editor-in-chief of Book and Film Globe, www.bookandfilmglobe.com. We cover the worlds of books and film and streaming TV and so much more. If you liked this show, and I know you did, please leave us a thumbs up or a review on Apple or Spotify or wherever you're listening to the show. And I will talk to you soon.
Original production. The Bookhouse is an independent bookstore with two locations in New Jersey, Millburn and Long Branch. Are you the guy who says they like to support indie bookstores? Good. Then be that guy. Come shop at the Bookhouse. Books, puzzles, games, coffee, cards, live author events, comedy nights, and most important, a real sense of community where actual human beings engage with one another. The Bookhouse in downtown Millburn and at Pier Village in Long Branch. That's the Bookhouse. Independent, local, quaint as fuck. Follow us on Instagram and come visit our stores.